Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
It's time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet of said Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning, Jill.
All right. Very urgent question here, especially for the colder months.
I'm ready for these wonderful questions.
I think they're pretty.
They make my day.
Some of them are, I mean, I find them fascinating. I really do.
I do, too. And it's interesting because they're out of the blue and they're not related to an animal that I'm looking at. It's interesting what people are concerned about,
which
helps
seeing
me to address those things better in my practice.
Yeah, and I just always wonder about, it's like the civilian angle, because many years ago when we first met, P.S., I remember you sitting down and telling me, well, such and such dog couldn't basically move, because if he moved, it was going to be a problem. And I was going, okay, now how do I make that happen? And, and then you told me how to do it. But I, trying to translate instructions with a civilian mind, I just think it works both ways, and I think it's wonderful. And we are going to go to Brian in Brooklyn, because he would like to know if a hairless dog needs to wear clothes. He applied to adopt a miniature Mexican hairless mix, I guess, and he can't tell if it's necessary to have a whole wardrobe ready for her or only a sweater for the winter.
So if she is a mix, she may have some hair, but most of them, and actually the breed can be haired as well, but if this is a hairless dog, which are the ones that I've seen, then they do get cold pretty easily, but not. It shouldn't be necessary to have a whole wardrobe. You want to have a, probably for certainly half the year, there's probably not going to be any necessity in wearing a cover-up, except when it's there's a lot of sun, so that's concerning. Having a little lightweight, breathable top for covering her back when there's a lot of sun, you can get that material that is SPF, the stuff that the kids wear to the beach. And have something to protect her from the sun, and then have a couple of various weights of cover-ups for the colder weather. So even something maybe for spring and fall, and then something for the middle of winter, which is a little bit warmer, that might be or another waterproof. So these dogs are going to get very cold when they get wet. So maybe something waterproof as well. So now that I'm talking about all these things, I guess it is a wardrobe, isn't it?
It is. And I just, on the topic of wardrobe, I know somebody who recently got a very small dog, and I caught her in the clothing section at the pet store. Like, oh, and here's a this, and here's a that. Can you dress? this is a new one on me. But then I guess a late lamented friend had a teacup poodle that she constantly smothered in cashmere. I couldn't imagine that.
And they don't get as cold, but I can see now that I have a poodle. I think he's a poodle or a poodle mix. Because you want to keep that curly, kinky hair clipped down so far so it doesn't mat, and they do get cold. So I'll keep my dog clipped all winter, and I have a little, this is the first year because he's turned six and now gets a little bit cold. I have a little fleece for him for right after he's groomed. So that's not a bad idea, but if you've got a full-coated dog, it's probably going to be too hot with clothing on.
And one of the things that we learned in a couple episodes ago, which was fascinating, was how, obviously some, like people, some dogs run warm, some dogs run hot, and the warmer the dog or the cold? So outside, if you run warm, do you do better in colder weather? Is that, does it reverse?
Yes.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
So those are the, so that's the dog that has more ticks than the other dog who's just kind of a regular temperature.
I think in general, that's been my observation.
Yeah, no, that's what we learned. That is from two episodes ago. And it's just fascinating because, of course, that makes, you know, when you start thinking in terms of, okay, these guys are individuals and they have temperatures and you need to, you know, I would no more put a coat on one of them than I would. But if you've got a clipped down poodle that's, you know, that gets chilly, then you do need a fleece.
Right, and you also have to think about age and activity level.
Right.
So, you know, my guy never would have allowed me to put a coat on him when he was two. You know, he'd be so active outside and too hot. And he just runs hotter. So, and if we have, you know, small breed dogs who are, you know, up there in age, then they can wear a coat, too. They get a little shivery. Those little feet get cold, too.
Right.
So that's the other thing, is they make some clothing now that covers the legs, at least front legs, that might be helpful.
And do we have to worry about feet on the hairless? It's a puppy.
I think that they will, because they're, you know, I think that, number one, they come in different sizes, so it depends on how little this dog is. But they tend to be very fine-boned and have small feet, and they can get cold, yeah. So booties, if it's indicated.
Okay.
They also can be sensitive. The skin can be more sensitive than other dog skin. So you don't want to put something scratchy on there. You know, we want to really preserve that nice, smooth feeling. Otherwise, your dog's not going to like the clothing.
It's
important.
Sorry about that noise, but yeah, I think that's really important, because otherwise it's just, and then I don't know, this dates me, but old Barbie clothes, like whatever that material was, like, oh God, I wouldn't want that. Good thing it was a doll, because I wouldn't want that on my skin. I could never make that work.
I hadn't thought about that. But you're right.
Well, right, but when you think about the material, and when I'm talking about outfits, I mean, it's like, okay, and now I'm going to dress my dog up as a shark. He's like, please don't. I genuinely don't know. I would think about what material you're putting on your dog's skin if you
absolutely, because there's no coat, there's no hair in between the material and the skin.
Yep. All right, Anna Maria in Millerton. I recently rescued the sweetest little pug. Like a lot of dogs with smushed faces, she has trouble breathing. She's a big snorer, but during the day there's a lot of wheezing too. My question, is there anything I can do at home to ease her breathing, or at least not aggravate her or the condition?
So the difficulty breathing with pugs, with brachycephalic breeds, brachycephalic meaning short head, basically, the translation is. And they're dogs who have a short skull, a little bit wider, typically. And they can have something called brachycephalic syndrome, causing difficulty with breathing. And it starts usually, there's a combination of features that we see from when they're young. It is thought to really be exacerbated by the number one feature with it, which is stenotic nares. So the nares are the little openings in the nose. And when stenosis means smaller, so when they are small and not opened up, you get a lot of negative pressure trying to get enough air in. And that can lead to all kinds of other problems. They can also have enlarged tonsils and an elongated soft palate. So they have the soft palate of a dog who's got a nose and they don't have one. And so it sticks back too far, causes some troubles. And, of course, the more trouble you have breathing, the more collapsing of everything that happens when you breathe in. So my number one, even without meeting your dog, is weight loss. So I'm not sure. I've only seen a few pugs in my lifetime that weren't overweight. So I'm guessing that this little one might be overweight, but maybe not. If your veterinarian says she's overweight, losing weight can really help with breathing in general. But if she has the features of brachycephalic syndrome, like small nose openings, a very elongated soft palate, and she's always having trouble breathing, and she's young, surgery may be something that you'd want to have her evaluated for. they need to, a specialist would do the surgery, but you need to have a mild sedation so that, or I guess I actually would be call it light anesthesia, so that they can observe the breathing and see what's happening there and see what needs to be done surgically. Some of the pugs also have what's called a hypoplastic trachea, so the windpipe is too small, and that adds to the problem. So what can you do at home? You can, you know, anything that irritates the airway, like particulate matter, like dust in the air, spraying things that have a scent to them, you know, the Febreze, they can really irritate the airways. Having just after you dust the house, you might want to put her outside while you're dusting. A wood stove that produces a lot of dust because it's really dry in the house, those kinds of things you have to think about. So running a humidifier would not be a bad idea in the wintertime. And being a normal weight is super important. Also, caring for those teeth, because if we have a lot of bacteria on the teeth, of course, the upper airway.
All right.
I hope that helps.
It does.
That's a lot of information.
Yeah, but again, it's going to be something... People definitely need to know to look around their house and say, oh, yeah, I'm actually having this at this very moment. The heat's on. It's dry. Everyone's got split ends happening.
Right.
And it's just, it's an external something that needs to be, I should actually cheat and ask what should be done. You know, what do you add something to their food or whatever? But I would just notice that once the heat came on, the scratching started. Yeah, you know, just the skin kind of.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the skin is dry and flaking off.
Yep. All right. Marlon in Albany, my husky mix just started to lose hair from around his nose. Is that normal?
That is not normal. You can see that the hair is sparse and the skin is showing through, then something's going on. Around the nose, it often is a bacterial infection. If you've got a dog who's doing any digging or sticking his nose places, or if he's itchy around the face. So inhale the allergies, basically, to pollens and so forth. It's called atopy or atopic dermatitis. And dogs with atopy classically have itchy feet and itchy face. So nothing was mentioned about the itch, so maybe it's just hair loss, in which case it could possibly be a folliculitis where you get bacterial infection into the hair follicles. Usually there's some redness associated with that and maybe some bumps. It's possible it could be ringworm also and maybe some sort of immune-mediated disease, so something that needs to get checked out. Not normal.
Okay, that was easy. Yes, no. All right, Beth in Millbrook, my cat has had two bladder infections in the past 3 years, and I'd rather give her something natural than keep dosing her with antibiotics. We had this question years ago. She's 8 years old. Is there an equivalent for cats like drinking cranberry juice is for humans?
Well, this is a really interesting question to revisit because we've learned a lot in the past 15 or 20 years about cats with what we used to think was bladder infections. It certainly is possible with a female cat, and I think you said she,
yes,
to have a bladder infection that ascends from the outside up to through the urethra up into the bladder. So certainly possible. It's very unlikely with a male, but more commonly, this is not from necessarily bacterial infection per se, and can be, and even if it is, can be exacerbated by the fact that cats don't drink enough water. So number one, I want you to be sure that it is an infection. So your veterinarian should take, if at all possible, take urine directly from the bladder and look at it and see if there's signs of increased white blood cells, definitely bacteria, and sometimes blood, and perhaps even a culture. So a urine culture would not be a bad idea with a repeated urinary tract infection. Now, this is only two times so far, so the next time it happens, and I suspect it will, then what we want to do is see if, in fact, you're culturing an E. coli. So the only thing that the cranberry extract or cranberry juice will do that we know I guess it acidifies the urine a little bit, which helps to reduce bacterial growth. But it also can reduce the adherence of E. coli bacteria to the bladder wall. So it's not a common thing with cats. It can be when they're older age, but I think you first need to know, I mean really old, 18, 19. First you need to know whether you're really dealing with a bladder infection. And if that's the case, the best thing to do is hydrate your cat really well so that when you get small amounts of bacteria in there, that they can be washed right out. And that means encouraging water drinking. That means all canned food. Sometimes that means putting her on a diet that will promote increased water consumption and one of the urinary diets and a more acid urine to inhibit the bacterial growth as well. So diet, water, so there are water fountains I think we've talked about before that some cats like. If your cat likes to drink out of the faucet, you may need to run that faucet several times a day, change the water frequently, add water to the food, try adding some watered down broth, things like that to encourage water consumption.
All right. And some cats will drink broth, yes?
Yeah, some will. Cats are creatures of habit, so it depends on what they were introduced to when they're young. You know, kittens, it's nice to introduce kittens to a variety of foods.
And do you recommend starting them with wet, or do you...
Yeah, absolutely. If I had my druthers, all cats would eat canned food only, or raw or canned food, with plenty of water in it, because they don't really like to drink water. People see them when they're eating an all-dry food diet. People see them drinking a lot of water, and they think that they're getting a lot of water, but in reality, they never drink enough to make up for the water that would have been in the food. Does that make sense?
Yes. But until you realize that, until you actually focus on that, a good way is, here's a civilian way, to say that, you know, your cats in the wild aren't stopping for crackers, you know, as they're chasing an antelope or whatever.
Right, right. The other thing to consider is if you're getting repeated true infection, then you maybe have bladder stones or kidney stones. And so X-ray plus or minus an ultrasound would be a good idea. So you want to figure out, you know, what is the inciting cause of this? What's the underlying cause? Not just continue to put a Band-Aid on it or assume that if you give cranberry extract, you know, there is a product called Crenanidin for dogs. I've never had to use cranberry on cats because you can usually figure out a way to, that something is wrong, you prevent it from being wrong, and you don't have to add all those things.
Right. Which is really helpful in terms of proceeding intelligently. Undine in Hudson, I'm considering adopting a Dachshund Terrier mix. She has been diagnosed with patella luxation. I've done a little bit of internet research, but I'd like to hear what a real vet has to say about what I might be in for as far as taking care of it goes.
Such good in-depth questions today. So, patella luxation. So, usually the patella is the kneecap. So it's on the hind leg, and almost 100% of the time they luxate or dislocate to the inside of the leg. So it's called medial, medial being the inside, lateral being the outside, medial patellar luxation. And it's graded on a scale of 1 to 4. So number 1 being that I can make that patella come out of the groove, but it pops right back in when I let go of it. That's a mild MPL, it's a grade 1. Grade 2 usually means that it will pop out on its own but can easily be replaced. And so you end up sometimes with a lameness that lasts only a couple of seconds. Other dogs are lame for longer periods of time. So that needs to be evaluated by your veterinarian as far as what can you do about that. And in my opinion, building strength does help. So, you know, if you're going to build the quadriceps muscles, then you're going to tighten up that patella a little bit. You can also, You know, it's a lot of times with the dachshund and little small terriers, it is a matter of the groove not being deep enough. But many dogs go through life with a grade 2, and they do fine without problems. If it's slipping out a lot, you're going to have arthritis over time, which is painful. The slipping of the patella is not painful. Sometimes you can hear it pop. You'll see them. It'll pop to the inside. They'll stretch the leg out, limp a couple of steps, stretch the leg out. It'll pop back in, and they keep going. And then there's grade 3 and 4. So grade 3 is, you know, is it stuck out to the inside. It's stuck out of the groove, but you can put it back. Grade 4 is it's stuck out, and you can't put it back. So those really tend to need surgery. So it's something that, you know, could be a big deal depending on what we're talking about, how severe it is with this little dachshund terrier mix. If it's really severe, those back legs will be bowed and they won't be able to extend their legs very well. And so they kind of get weak in the hind end and bowed legs, and it's difficult to deal with. So again, the answer is it depends.
And from the question, it looks like you have to, what you could do is find out from whoever you're
whoever
adopting.
Diagnosed it, right? Yeah. So whoever diagnosed it needs to grade it for you, and
then you'll have
and
a better,
maybe talk directly to that veterinarian.
And then you'll have a better idea of what you know what you need to do, what you'll be in for, and whether or not you can handle it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, hopefully, if we've got a 9-year-old dachshund that has patellas that are medially luxated and fixed and can't be moved back, that somebody will adopt that little dog. And then it's a whole different story, probably too late to do surgery at that point, but maybe not. The dog would need to be evaluated by a surgeon. And then so you can actually deepen the groove, and you can move the crest of the tibia, so you can actually move the patellar tendon surgically so that the leg is a little bit straighter, so that the tendon's a little straighter. So things that can be done, they're not necessarily inexpensive.
Right, but it's also, in considering it, there you've, I think, given some really good questions that can be, you know, there's a little, we've taken it to the next step, we're off the internet, and, you know, these are definitely some questions that should be asked from, you know, whoever you're adopting it from, and as you said, the vet that diagnosed it.
Right.
I think we've got time for one last question. David in Great Barrington. My wife and I recently bought a retired show dog, a 6-year-old male Bernese Mountain Dog. Is there any benefit to having him neutered at this late date?
In my opinion, I would say no, not necessarily. So I would have him checked very well and make sure that a veterinarian does a rectal exam and his prostate feels symmetrical and normal, and his testicles are normal. And if that's the case, I probably differ from most veterinarians in that I'm not sure that there would be a good reason to neuter him, especially this breed that doesn't have a great life expectancy. I think they can use all the help that they can get from testosterone, and I think that as long as you watch, you can get benign prostatic hyperplasia. You can get prostate cancer, but it is less common. Pretty uncommon, I would say, in general, and more common, believe it or not, in the neutered male. So the benign prostatic hyperplasia, which is what people get too, can cause problems with urinating if the prostate gets big from the hormones. And at that point, if you've got an otherwise healthy dog, you can have him neutered. Usually improves the problem greatly by having him neutered at that point. But if his prostate's fine, I would say, and his behavior is good, and you don't let him run loose, then there isn't compelling evidence that tells me that you need to have him neutered.
All right.
Although, if he's a retired show dog, they may require that you have him neutered. So there you go.
Right. Exactly. But bottom line, I think we're going to just go with the medical aspect and let them fight it out. Let's see.
Right.
No, because they got him. My wife and I recently bought, so they got him. So.
Oh, right.
So I'm yeah. So this is more like a household question, and I'm just going to come down on the side of you're very even-handed, just saying I've had intact males, and I'm just much happier with them by and large. There are enough other problems, physical problems. Right.
I mean, the evidence shows that if you wait until they're a couple of years old, then you can have protection against some cancers and hip dysplasia, et cetera, et cetera. But at this age, I'm not sure there's compelling evidence to have me tell you that yes, you should have them neutered right away.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. Who let the dogs out? Who?